Hey everybody, welcome to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I am joined for this very special F This Movie Fest 3 podcast by, oh my gosh, almost everyone. Let's go around. Adam Risky.
Hi.
Mike.
Hey everybody.
Adam Foss.
Hey there.
Douglas.
Station.
Erica.
Hi guys.
Jan.
Hi everybody.
Mark on.
Good evening.
Jay Bones.
Howdy do.
And, holy cow, we just finished F This Movie Fest 3. Everyone give yourselves a round of applause. I assume all of you are clapping at home. This is our third all-Twitter film festival, which, you can find us at fthismovie.net, and you can follow us on Twitter at fthismovie, and email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Hopefully, if you're listening to this, you participated in F This Movie Fest 3, celebrating the films of 1985. So, we did a podcast last week where, Douglas, you asked me hilariously if F This Movie Fest 3 was my favorite, or that was on our video.
Yeah,
was my favorite F This Movie Fest, and I jokingly said yes, because, ha ha ha, that was the future, and it hadn't happened yet. But guess what? We just finished it. It was by far my favorite F This Movie
what
Fest.
What made it your favorite compared to the previous
It two? Was a huge, huge
success.
So many people participating, so much positivity, so much fun. We'll go through the movies in just a couple of minutes, but oh my gosh, what a success the whole thing was. We had the screenwriter of Explorers joining us. We had horror director Lucky McKee joining us. We had Mackenzie Astin was tweeting us at one point.
Morgan Fairchild
jumped in. Robert Zemeckis News jumped in.
The biggest Hollywood heavy hitters. Yeah.
It just was so, so great. And at the end, it turned into just a major, major love fest, but I've never felt better about F This Movie and about the F This Movie community. I'm riding such a high right now.
But again, I think that speaks to, again, what we talked about in terms of, like, there's no negativity on the website. There's not, it's an all-inclusive environment. You can have your crazy opinions. You can like Goonies, for example, and you're not ostracized for it. Maybe by a few people, but still, it's a loving community, so
what do you mean?
It's just
the
a good feeling.
Good enough for me.
So I guess we could just go right in and talk about the movies of the fest. We kicked things off with Pee-wee's Big Adventure, directed by Tim Burton. Who wants to take point on Pee-wee?
Mike?
Pee-wee kicks ass.
Mike?
La 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 la. Pee-wee is awesome. I was really excited to see it. I haven't seen it in quite a while, and I thought it played, like, in our room alone, it played great. And on Twitter as well. It was a
Patrick
ton of fun.
Patrick pointed out while we were watching it, and something that I really hadn't thought about before, but obviously laughed at, it's really full of jokes. It's just
it's joke, non-stop. Yeah, it's
three times more jokes than the standard brand.
A couple of people talked about how it's like a Simpsons episode. There's this layer on top of layer.
Right.
If you miss it, it's almost like a Zucker type movie too, where it's just they're throwing everything. But unlike a Zucker movie, I think most of the jokes land.
The scene where the car goes over the cliff and it falls forever,
yeah,
specifically feels really like a Simpsons bit.
A cartoon.
And this is not. I'm not going to bag on Goonies at all. But when we revisit some of these movies from our childhood, like Goonies in 85, I think I got everything out of Goonies that I was going to get in 1985. But Pee-wee's Big Adventure, watching it today, was like, oh, there's no way I got a lot of this in 1985. I laughed at the silliness, and there were jokes I definitely thought were funny. But there are so many jokes in that movie that only work as you get older, which is why I would compare it to a Simpsons episode.
Right, I was going to say that. 1985, like, I loved it like I love it today, but for completely different reasons in a different way.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the great things.
But also, I thought sometimes there's jokes that are funny, and then 29 years later, they're not. And the jokes that I thought were the funniest when I first saw this, I still think are really funny. And I know down here in the basement, we all really responded to when Pee-wee's wondering where he is in the phone booth. That's hilarious.
But quick correction, dungeon, down here in the dungeon. Those chains aren't bolted to the wall for nothing.
So they don't go anywhere.
At one point, Patrick said I should put the lotion on my skin. I don't get it.
I noticed that I I appreciate the Pee-wee Herman character a lot differently than I did when I was a kid. Because when I was a kid, I had, you know, the pull string Pee-wee doll that talked, and I thought, ha ha.
Did yours try to kill you? Because mine did. He's like, get out of bed. There'll be no more laughs.
He tried to curb me. It was really awkward, but his legs didn't weigh very much. So I was like, this isn't working. Can we stop? This is awkward. No, but like, I really, that's exactly what it sounded like. No, but the thing I like about it now is Pee-wee's kind of a dick. He's just, like, not a very nice guy. Like, when he gets, like, really frustrated, he could be very sharp and mean to people. And that makes it funnier to me.
Or Dottie.
But that's also why I think kids respond so much to it, because he's a child. That's the kid wants what the kid wants and has no patience for anyone else. And that's what makes it so funny.
It was really fun having our son Charlie down here with us. He's 5. Yes. And we were kind of on the fence about letting him watch it, but he seemed to enjoy it. And
he was still talking about it when I put him to bed.
Right, and then he.
He no longer calls me Uncle Doug. He calls me Amazing Larry.
But we were really concerned that he would be afraid
of Large Marge,
right?
Because all of us are.
Right, we are still today. We were kids, right? But he didn't faze him at all.
No.
He was kind of fascinated by what it looked like.
And I've totally tried to get him to watch. Like, sometimes we'll be down here picking out movies, and I'll try and get him to watch Pee-wee's Playhouse, because I think he would like it. And I'll say, like, it's about this funny guy who lives in a silly house. And he's like, no, let's watch Cars again.
He's like, Dad, I don't like Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah, so I'm happy that he got to see it, and hopefully will now ask, to watch it again. Cause
I wanted to respond to something Adam said. You said that you interpret the Pee-wee Herman character differently now than you did back then. Tonight, this afternoon, at noon, we started with Pee-wee. I interpreted it differently, certainly, than when I saw it originally, because what I was getting out of it was, and this is one thing that our website has sort of been devoted to, is he enjoys things completely and unironically. And if anything, that's even more rare now than it was in 1985, that his joy is infectious. Yes, occasionally he is a dick, but when he's doing something he likes to do, it's complete and total pleasure.
Well, that kind of, not to jump around, but that goes along with, I found myself really, like, not choking up, but getting emotionally invested with Sean Astin in Goonies this time, more so than ever, because he's because he has asthma. Just like me, breathless Mahoney. But no, he's just completely sincere, and he's just really, you know, about business. He's just like, let's stay at the task on hand. So, like, everybody else is yelling and screaming around him.
He's
just like, yeah, in Goonies, no. And then he's just like, no, guys, come on. And, like, he wants to stay on point. And Pee-wee's got the same energy.
Where Astin finally finds the pirate and has that moment.
Yeah.
I actually thought that still worked.
Yep.
Adam?
I agree with what you guys were saying.
Well said!
Who needs two atoms? Let's split them.
The Pee-wee
split
character.
The atom.
This is weird.
And he goes
Atom bomb! Kaboom! You just got Bill Nye, science guy.
Sorry, you were saying?
That's okay, it's okay. The Pee-wee character, like, when I was younger seeing it, I was like, this guy's awesome. Like, I want to be like Pee-wee when I get older. And now watching it, I'm like, this guy is an idiot. Like,
well, to be fair, when you got arrested for jerking off in the theater, that's a
I gotta say, I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because it's something I want to talk about on this podcast, you guys.
When you got arrested?
I want to change directions, and this podcast is going to become about something else. No, I have to applaud our community. We watched that entire movie, and not one person made it. Really, it was Mike.
Yeah, it was Mike
ruined
just
the
now,
streak
I think,
just
wow,
now by
sorry,
getting hacky
job
on the podcast.
It wasn't even about the movie. It was about his friend, Adam,
who loves spamming.
I'm going to just defend him. He was in the theater with me at the time.
No, but truly, like 10 minutes in, I think I turned to Doug and said, hey, this is impressive. Nobody's made that reference yet.
Right.
And we watched the entire 90-minute movie, and then four other movies, and nobody mentioned Pee-wee jerking off.
Way to go, F this movie community.
Every other movie, I'm pretty sure, had, like, jerking off jokes in them, but not Pee-wee's Big Adventure, guys.
No.
Way to go. That movie, like the last movie that we watched, I think those were the two best, and
are completely timeless. They work just as well now in 2014. I almost said 2004.
Well,
it's been a long day.
Pee-wee's Big Adventure takes place in this weird
alternate universe. Right, except for like Twisted Sister and Mr. T Cereal. There's nothing to date that movie.
Because there's also so much like throwback stuff in this house. And the bike itself is so, you know, 1945.
Yeah.
So it's this weird, colorful, just experience of the world that doesn't really exist.
Yeah.
We were talking about how perfect Back to the Future is in terms of script and performances and things. Again, going back to Pee-wee, is it the script? Is it the direction? Is it the performance? And people were commenting on this on the Twitter machine. Francis, we hate him. Like, instantly, within seconds of him showing up. What is that?
He's Guillermo del Toro. He's overrated.
It's a great performance, and it's well-written, and like a lot of my favorite comedies, it sets up a very consistent universe, which is so great.
It's the perfect storm, I think, of everyone at their peaks. Phil Hartman co-wrote it.
It's the perfect storm of comedies, you're saying. Like, the perfect storm is the perfect storm of perfect storms.
Right.
This is the perfect storm of
comedies. He's got a problem. Yeah. He has a woman he loves, but then again, he loves to fish. It's my perfect storm.
That is
quote.
Impressive.
I mean, Pee-wee's at the peak. Phil Hartman is co-writer. It's his Tim Burton's debut, so he's thrown all these tricks. It's Danny Elfman before we get sick of his Oompa Oompa.
Great score.
It's everything just the way you want it, and then they're just kind of riding that coattail, I think, for the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
I mean, Big Top Pee-wee's kind of garbage.
Yeah,
and Tim Burton has made a couple great movies in the 80s, but, you know, obviously is.
But this was the movie, right, because it was his first movie, and he had this animation background. Like, he just lays it all on the line.
And I think
like,
it's been said,
all this stuff I wanted to do.
It's been
the
said
scene
a lot
in
of,
the scene in the dark with Pee-wee's eyes.
A lot of first directors, they say, like, your first, I mean, it's like, you've been thinking about your first movie for 20 years, so, like, your first movie has everything, and I think that's part of this, too. Like, let's do an animation sequence.
Right.
Let's do these cartoonish clown sequences that are scary. I mean, it might not have anything to do with the plot, but they stick it in there and it works.
Right.
And the TV show was like that too.
Yeah.
The claymation and cartoons and characters.
And that's one of the things that's impressive about it too, is that Tim Burton, and maybe because he wasn't yet Tim Burton, I guess that wouldn't really happen until like Batman, but he doesn't just hijack the movie and turn it into a Tim Burton movie. He really does the best possible job of servicing the Pee-wee Herman character. So it feels like a Pee-wee Herman movie and a Tim Burton. It's sort of a collaboration instead of just...
And the shout-outs. The shout-outs, I think, seem more genuine and sort of good-humored and don't overshadow things.
Right,
as
right.
opposed to later, where it's almost like he's doing fan service.
Right. Yeah.
No one was wearing black and white stripes.
Well,
Johnny Depp, nowhere to be found.
I was going to say, consider this. This is one of the few Tim Burton films without the Tim Burton mank, the character that's him.
Somebody tweeted that Johnny Depp played the bike.
Where was Helena Bonham Carter?
Good question.
But only post-transformation. All right, so next up was Commando. And listen at this movie. I knew that Commando wasn't the same quality-wise as Pee-wee's Big Adventure or Back to the Future. But, again, you have to think about movies that will be fun to tweet through and... I think we can agree that Commando was a lot of fun to tweet during. Yes.
Yes.
Some of you were seeing Commando for the first time. No.
Yes. No.
And?
I saw it for the first time.
Yeah.
I wish
you weren't having to tweet through the whole thing.
There was a person during Back to the Future. I think it was G Rambo said, "This
Rambo.
Is the first time I'm seeing Back to the Future." I almost felt bad for him because I'm like, "Oh my god, you'll enjoy it, but you really
watch
need
it
to
again
see
after this."
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I felt the same with Commando for me. Like
you probably got it.
I was, but I was planning to F this movie my own Twitter account, and I'm like, my neck's hurting, and I'm like, oh, this is no way to watch this for the first time, and it's so ridiculous and over the top, and I really wanted to, you know, totally have it envelop me, and I didn't.
Which leads to my question for Patrick, the master of heavy action.
Mm. Thank you.
There's this film, and then there's Rambo.
Right.
And then there's Die Hard.
Yeah.
Watching Commando again, it seems to me one of the films that sort of became the blueprint for a lot of stuff that came after.
Written by the same screenwriter. Stephen E. D'Souza wrote Commando and Die Hard.
Okay. So what would you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. No, 85 was the year that sort of the modern action movie was birthed.
Bennett knew what a TV dinner felt like.
That's exactly right. Anyone want to weigh in on Commando?
I have no hacky masturbation jokes for this
one. So you got nothing?
No, I got nothing. I got to be sad.
One thing I noticed, and people were tweeting about it, and I had always like ascribed it to Total Recall, the Schwarzenegger version of Total Recall. The sheer brutality of the end, it reminded me of like a video game, like a first-person shooter video game.
Yeah.
It's almost the pornography of violence that it goes on so long. It's certainly not in the service of the
Reagan's
story.
America.
And there's similar scenes. There's similar scenes and shots in the original Schwarzenegger Total Recall where it's just him machine gunning everybody down.
I don't know how to psychoanalyze it quite exactly, but it's reminded me of when I saw The Raid Redemption in a theater, and people were audibly, like, cheering and going, ooh, or, oh, God, and it's the same vibe, like, that's what makes it so fun for you to kind of go into your guy chip brain and just, like, ooh and ah over something that's just so completely ridiculous, but mesmerizingly just so that there's such a pleasure in that.
I mean, the first time you meet Arnold Schwarzenegger, it's like this kind of psych out fake reveal.
Yeah.
You think he's going to be this like...
They flip the script.
Yeah, but I mean, every shot is like of his like pulsing, sweaty muscles.
He's carrying a log.
I know, and it's like, and then he picks up Alyssa Milano, and it's just such a weird... The whole thing is crazy. Okay, so on Friday, I did the trailers, and I saw the trailer for Commando, and I'm sure I've seen that trailer before, but it reminded me, and I wrote this, of like a parody of an action movie.
Right,
and you watch it again, and there's a scene where Arnold Schwarzenegger, later in the movie, when he's, like, gonna kick ass, it's right before the climax, where he suits up, and it's like an A-team, like, montage of him putting knife here, snipping a grenade here, putting chalk or whatever on his arm.
Grease paint.
It's unbelievable, and it doesn't stop.
It keeps going.
It keeps going.
And it's so loud. That's what I really noticed.
Someone down here in the dungeon, was it you or you, during that montage, kept saying, more, more, more. Who was that?
That was Doug.
Okay.
Oh, my God, I wanted more.
My memory of the movie, too, is always that it's more of that last 20 minutes, that the whole second half is just him running around that compound shooting people. But so much of it is just him, like, in a mall and in a car and in a hotel. Like, it takes him a long time to get to that compound.
What movie did that recently? Was it Hot Fuzz that just did the sequence where they're suiting up?
It just takes
forever and ever and ever, and it's so great.
And the hilarious thing about that compound sequence is, and I had forgotten this until a couple years ago when I saw it again, because I've talked a million times about how this was the first R-rated movie I saw, and it's like, yeah, it's violence, but I could handle that because people getting shot. And a lot of people get shot. And then at a certain point, they're like, man, we need to go a little further.
So we're sick of bullets.
He's picking up those saw blades and chopping, like, scalping people and lopping their arms off. It turns into a Tom Savini movie. It's unbelievable.
It's just Pee-wee's Big Adventure again, only completely twisted around. They're both guys who spend a lot of time going different places to find the thing.
One
that they
wants
love,
a bike, one wants a daughter.
They both totally commit to the weird character they are in a world where the laws of physics don't quite apply. I mean,
lots of cocaine was consumed.
If they were made the same year, I'd swear Commando was a remake of Pee-wee's Big Adventure. When he's cutting limbs off people, it reminded me of that thing in UHF, Conan the Librarian, when he literally chops the person in half.
Right. Don't you know that the way that's
And also just a great use of a mall, which, e.g., you know, Tim and Eric's billion-dollar movie did not know what to do with their mall.
What a weird reference.
I like watching malls.
You must have Blues Brothers.
That's
some good malls.
So crowded and so colorful. Some good malls. Yeah.
A lot of people on Twitter commented on how many
good
security
mall,
guards there were. But I loved...
Alexi Ramirez.
I loved this afternoon when the Twitterverse exploded when they had the scene of them feeding the deer.
The first we exploded down here, and I believe it was Corbin Foster was the one who pointed out, the week leading up to the announcement of F This Movie Fest 3, I was every day posting a picture of something that was supposed to be a clue, and most people got, you know, that we were doing 85, and they were picking the right movies, and the only one that people didn't really get was the ice cream cone, and when it showed up in the first 5 minutes of Commando, I think it was Corbin Foster who said, oh, and there's the ice cream cone, because it always struck me so funny that they're both eating vanilla, but they share each other's cones.
Samantha, try my ice cream.
I unabashedly love Commando, and certainly a lot of it is nostalgia, but being a fan of a certain kind of action movie, this is really the purest expression of stupid action movie that I can think of.
Hashtag heavy penny. I mean, heavy action.
And it was fun, and I hope everybody enjoyed it. Okay, Explorers.
How do you start with that? Yeah.
Well, this was fascinating. Okay, so I'm going to do a little bit of a spiel here, because I talked a lot on our podcast leading up to it, on the video, saying that this was the one that was going to be kind of like, I don't know. And it's the type of movie that I like, sort of that Amblin vibe with kids and something alien or magical or supernatural. Science. I love science, as anyone who knows me will know. It was directed by Joe Dante, and Joe Dante is very active on Twitter, and I thought, oh gosh, maybe he'll engage with us, and I'm just a huge Joe Dante fan, and as Doug pointed out, this was the movie he made in 1985, so... Leading up to the fest, I was starting to get cold feet, and I was thinking, like, oh, I probably should have picked, you know, Better Off Dead or whatever. So we put it on, and my feeling about Explorers has always been, and I've explained, that the movie is unfinished, that Joe Dante is aware of the flaws, that they basically, the studio released it way before it was done, and they just said, we're moving your date up, it's going out as is. So it's a mess, especially at the end, and my feeling was always, I love the first hour, all the setup, and then when they get into space, I feel like the air kind of gets sucked out of it. And it's for a purpose, and I like some of the ideas in that last half hour. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But I do really like that first hour. And so it was really interesting to watch the reaction on Twitter, because this was a movie that a lot of people were saying, never seen this, interested in seeing it. And for that first hour, everybody's saying, this is great. I'm really digging this. Love the music.
I've never seen this
love
before.
The vibe. Love these kids. What and wonder. I'm just stealing myself. We're like, oh, Jesus, you guys, you don't know. This movie's going to take a turn. Some people still liked the turn. A lot of people turned against the movie very, very hard. And I can't blame any of you for that, because the last half hour is almost antithetical to everything that was in the first hour, because the whole first hour is about the wonder of what's out there, and we can't wait to discover it. There's infinite possibility. And then that last half hour very cynically says, there's nothing out there. There's a reflection of ourselves. They're aliens, and they're kids just like us, and all they do is absorb American pop culture and watch TV and speak in commercials. And Joe Dante himself, I even think, was quoted somewhere, and I don't remember where, talked about how the movie is about these kids who go into the infinite searching for God and discover that he doesn't exist. And that's fucked up. Don't expect that in the first hour, but let's go around and give some reactions to Explorers, because I think this was sort of the most controversial, and over on Twitter I kept saying, like, we're going to talk about this on Monday, guys. Tune in. We'll start with you, Ed.
Oh, Jesus. I need to watch Explorers again. I like it only because Patrick probably wants me to like it at this point. I really just found it depressing and unpleasant. Really, not just the last half hour. I wasn't with it as much as most people were in the beginning. Yeah. It was the movie, I think I joked, but I sort of meant it too when it was over. I felt like the most introspective during, because I was like trying to analyze why I was feeling so depressed by everything in it. And I think a little bit of it was just like watching Child River Phoenix. And some of it was like fact of,
you knew that child Ethan Hawke would someday cheat on Uma Thurman.
A little bit.
You fool.
And also,
he didn't see Mad Dog and Glory at that point.
I don't know. I have a very strong reaction a lot of times to how things visually impact me, such as Brazil. Like, I can appreciate how quote-unquote terrific the movie is, but I find it just such a horrible experience to watch that I never, ever want to watch it. And I felt the same thing with the last half hour of Explorers. Yeah. I mean, those aliens are so gross-looking, and what they're doing is so creepy in, like, the Joe Dante Twilight Zone, the movie segment kind of way, that it's just intensely unpleasant for me, and I really... Damn it, Patrick. I really didn't like it.
This whole time you're talking, Patrick's like, it's smiling, like, oh, yeah.
Because I completely understand everything he's saying.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, really?
Yeah, I know what I'm doing. Yeah, I'm a Joe Dante fan. I'm glad that I gave it a chance. I probably will rewatch it, because there was a lot of it where I was saying, you know, what the hell is happening? Because it's tough to keep up with a movie you've never seen while you're tweeting about it. But, yeah, I'm not looking forward to the experience of going back to it.
Mike? I don't know what to add on to that other than I...
Then bravo.
No, I didn't have as strong a reaction, but I haven't seen it since I was young, and I didn't remember it at all. It's definitely a movie I would want... I want to revisit, only because I feel like I didn't give it maybe a fair shake today. Again, just tweeting, and it was the middle movie. I think that's when my headache started.
Yeah.
I'm staring at a computer screen for...
In the dark.
12 hours.
Right. But yeah, no, I had a similar reaction to most. The first hour, I was definitely on board, and it takes a turn, and it was a little harder to get through, but...
Adam, you've been a fan of this movie for years.
I do. I really like this movie.
Yeah.
I do. And, you know, part of that might just... It's also that I loved this movie when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I watched it all the time. And I even watched it, you know, over the past couple of years. And I think it does become a mess at the end, but I like what it's saying, you know, and I like some of the idea. Like, I love that... You know, being a Star Trek fan and like and that idea that there's intelligent life out there, and then they find intelligent life, and these three kids are smarter than the aliens that they found. You know, these aliens just stole their dad's car. Like, they really don't own any of the technology or anything that they have. And just like the reaction of Ethan Hawke of how like upset he is about this, I love that part of the movie. One of the things that I do have to give JB, you had mentioned something about the last half hour of it with like kind of like this monolith that's we're creating, and it was really thoughtful, and I'd never thought of that before. So I mean, I know you're probably going to talk about it when we get to you, but that was awesome. So
J-Bones, why don't you just go?
Okay, well, I'm the contrarian. This is the triumphant return of the quibbler, because I don't like the first hour. I think the first hour only works as this amazing setup for the last half hour. The only reason why I think the last half hour works is because it's the last half hour of that first hour.
Sure.
And it seems to me that even in that segment, he seems to be biting the hand that feeds him, because it's clearly, like you mentioned, this Amblin homage,
right.
And it could practically be a Spielberg film and so forth. I think the first hour is really slow. That's my biggest problem with it. But when we get in outer space, suddenly, I think it's sort of amazing. I think it's worth, I think the last half hour is worth it just for that creature alone, the crazy stand-up comedian kid, that creature designed by Rob Bottin and his little caterpillar tail, and just the whole way he looks and stuff. But again, as Adam Thass alluded to, I think it's so transgressive and so... for a summertime kiddie blockbuster to rub our nose in that, because in effect, Dante's making fun of himself, because Explorers is part of that popular culture toilet that we're putting out. I mean, talk about a film critiquing
that's every
itself.
Joe, but that's every Joe Dante movie, too, which is why
but
he's so
this
rich.
One, and I think this is why a lot of people react the way they did. I mean, Adam Risky put his finger on it. It's really ugly.
Yeah.
And not particularly subtle. I mean,
I joked after it was over with you that this is the type of movie I would have seen at the Portage. Like, it's just, it screams the Portage. It's this dirty thing that, like, you watch in this dirty theater while you wait for the wrecking ball to come kill you.
But I think a lot of people on the Twitter were sort of complaining that the main creature boy's jokes weren't funny, as if the film was failing because Dante failed to put funny jokes in his mouth.
No.
But the fact that the jokes aren't funny is the point. And especially if you look at all the shit going on behind him on those screens, you're talking about something incredibly transgressive, because he's making bad jokes and there's mushroom clouds behind him. It's not subtle. I love the last half hour.
What a weird experiment. I mean, I think the movie's fascinating.
Yeah.
This is the first time I saw it. And I really want to see it again, because buried in a computer, you can't really appreciate it. But what a weird experiment, in as much as I get that that's maybe the point, but to go out, it's almost like you're going out to fail. Like, you're going to make a movie, like, I'm going to put this out there, and the point of it is, it's almost like a film school, like, film student saying, like, well, the point is they're not supposed
to
be
cold water in
your
face.
And it's It's no wonder this movie is not well known.
Right.
Really, no one knows about it, and it didn't make a lot of money, I don't think, in the 80s. It's just a very interesting experiment.
You could feel the air going out of the room.
Yeah.
In every room where this was being watched.
Yeah.
On the Twitter.
Every tweet was like, WTF? Like, what just happened to this movie I was enjoying? Absolutely. Anybody? Yeah.
Well, that took a turn.
I could see if you... I don't know. I don't agree. I could see if you love the second half and don't love the first half. I'm more of a person who loved the first half and not the second half. But I can't see being a person who could love both halves equally.
Right.
And I think
I might be Patrick.
We look at Pee Wee's Big Adventure and we look at Commando, and love them or hate them, the tone for each of them is consistent throughout. They commit from the beginning to what they are and what they do, and then they carry it through at full pace. Whereas this movie completely flips. The tone completely flips halfway through.
Yeah.
So if you're on board for the first part, it
no matter what, unless you're prepared for it and have seen it before, you can't prepare. You can't.
And I think you could have done the same message in the second half and still kept that tone, that kind of ambling tone. I mean, because look at E.T. He's a little ugly squid, too. And yet, throughout the movie E.T., there's a sense of wonder. And at the end, you're crying when they touch their fingers. Mm-hmm. And there's no way those two aliens at the end of Explorers could have made me cry.
Well, but the movie almost exists as like the antidote to E.T. Like, here's this movie about this cute alien who comes from outer space and teaches us how to love. And even though he is weird looking, he's sort of adorable and we've all fallen in love. You cannot fall in love with these aliens. No. They're repellent to look at. The lighting on the spaceship is, like you said, it's ugly.
It's a nightmare.
It's upsetting.
And I don't want to touch their fingers.
And nothing they say or do endears us to them either. It's only when we find out that they are
barely sexy.
It's really only when we find out that they're essentially scared children that we sort of are like, okay. But it's still not like, I want to be friends with them at all.
It's interesting that you mentioned the scared thing, because I think as a defense mechanism, almost more so than any other movie I've ever tweeted during an F-This Movie Fest, I was tweeting jokes because I was, like, kind of scared by the movie. Like, it's creepy, the fact that it's like if your dad took you to a baseball game and you were having a great time and he said, I'll be right back, buddy, and then he leaves you there. And then you have to, like, hitchhike your way home. Like,
That's Explorers.
I mean, it just is this
I think you should use that on the poster.
It's this kid's movie.
It's like hitchhiking your way home after your father leaves you to play.
It's like this kid's movie that leaves you with, like you said, God doesn't exist and everything's terrible and scary. I was really scared by this movie.
I think the last half hour turns the whole thing into a Shaggy Dog story, and people don't like that. But given what Jan was just saying, that it doesn't recover, don't you get the feeling that either the studio or Dante or someone grafted that we're flying thing at the end in the hopes of doing that?
They try and turn it around again, where it's like, oh, he gets the girl and everyone's flying and we're back in Spielberg land. But
it's the end of American Beauty.
We still have the bad taste in our mouth.
Right. And this, again, this is every Joe Dante movie, and I think this is the most extreme example. Gremlins, I think, would be sort of the most successful example of a movie that entertains and is fun, but also very subversive, and maybe you don't realize it. Small Soldiers is much more like Explorers, where it looks like this one thing, but it has all these other messages that alienate people from enjoying it, sort of. One super cool thing that happened, though, and sort of a first, I guess, for F-This Movie, was that during Explorers, we were joined for about the first half hour by Eric Luke, the screenwriter of Explorers, who was dropping some information and just talking about these were all based on people that I knew, and I'm the Ethan Hawke character, and this is named after Roger Corman, and lots of cool information. He was only able to be with us for like a half hour.
But he left us at the baseball game.
You beat me to it. I don't mean any disrespect, but a couple people mentioned that we've all talked about how the film takes a turn. Mm-hmm. And that Mr. Luke excused himself.
He's like, my phone's ringing, guys. I'll be right back.
When he really would have had some questions.
He was needed in the basement.
Please hold my hand through this.
I can't hear you, Daddy.
He knew what he was doing.
So, again, I know people, more than any movie, they're probably questioning this choice. I think I've explained it, and again, I hope everybody's at least happy to have seen it. Even if you didn't love it, even if you feel like this was more of a failure, I hope everybody was at least happy to have seen the movie since so many people hadn't, and maybe it gave you something to think about? I don't know. Anybody else on Explorers?
Or should kids we? Were adorable, so it was worth it just for that.
Sure. I thought Ethan Hawke was not adorable. I thought he was so precocious in a sort of like kid audition way. And liked him. I hate him. I hate Ethan Hawke in this movie.
We are turning on you. And you are just digging in deep.
I am. I'm like, that's the same. Wait till we talk about Goonies.
Digging in your heels.
No, he's so just like, I don't know, guys. Like, I don't know. Let's go flying.
Yeah. He's Anakin Skywalker.
Are you an angel? Come around and see me sometime.
No, guys, those are just movies.
The 10-year-old scary movie month. Explorers, I got a date. Yeah.
The 10-year-old in me also has always loved the tilt-a-whirl as sure. A spaceship.
Again, and Joe Dante, for those of us who love these old science fiction movies and just grew up on certain things, I mean, there's so much of that in these movies, and a lot of people were commenting on Twitter, right. Just, oh, I love that he has that poster in the background, or that they're watching this movie, or whatever. Or that Starkiller is the fake movie at the drive-in, which is a Star Wars joke, if you don't know, you guys. So then, Explorers ends, and we all say, well, that was something.
That was a thing.
And then we move on to Goonies, which again was sort of, I wouldn't say polarizing, because we've seen Goonies, and Goonies is very familiar to us. I've kind of said everything that I need to say about Goonies. We did a podcast on it a long time ago. You can listen to it. My feelings on it haven't necessarily changed. I thought it was fun to tweet through because, again, it is so familiar and we all have this connection to it from our childhood. And Cary Grant is in it, so I thought that was fine.
Yeah. You see a lot of her underpants.
People were a little harder on underpants. It than I thought they would be.
Yeah. A little bit of that I think is my fault because I think I've created an environment where it's like, a little bit cool to bag on Goonies, okay. But yeah, people were definitely hard. But I think some of that is because when you're not 8 years old,
I understand.
It's not the same movie, you know?
I want to make a point, too, and just to say that you talked about this environment where it's cool to bag on Goonies. I want to make a clear distinction. There's a reason why Goonies was in the lineup.
Yeah.
That you could have picked a lot of other movies from 1985, and you specifically...
Better Off Dead, I think I also could have picked. I keep bringing that one up.
Well, no, it could have...
We could have rewatched Explorers.
It could have easily replaced either Explorers or Goonies, but I feel like Goonies, it served a purpose. Yes, it's obviously kind of polarizing, but it's definitely a movie that's easy to watch.
Yeah.
It's easy to digest and to watch, and everyone knows the beats, and you kind of know what's coming up, so it's easy to tweet through it. What kind of bugged me, and this is a little nitpicky thing, was that the kind of vitriol towards it. And it's like, well, that's fine. You could say that this movie's bad. We all kind of, no one's claiming this movie is Citizen Kane or Vertigo. But it's like when you kind of, I felt like the frustration was more like, then it becomes about the programming and more about the festival and kind of like, well, I'm not enjoying this because of what you picked. And it's hold the phone. We're all enjoying this because it's ridiculous.
Right.
Yeah. I think in terms of programming, it came at a great time because it was like a breath of French.
It was like a breath of fresh
convention. It was just like something predictable and fun. And I'm kind of divided on Goonies, on the song Goonies by Sierra. I'm divided on Goonies, but I really like half of it, like Doug, whereas I feel like it's almost like a script if kids wrote a script. It's like kids playing.
Right.
When you would go play with your, like, kind of how you felt maybe with, like, I Declare War. It's like, this is what kids do when they're making up their own rules.
Right.
But I think the problem with it is it goes on too long.
Oh, yeah,
it's just way, it's like at least a half hour too long. And that's always been my issue with Goonies. But in terms of programming it and just kind of having the community together and just kind of having, you know, just a lot of fun tweeting about it, this was one of the more pleasant experiences I've had with
everything. Can't be Back to the Future, and Back to the Future is great, and we'll talk about that next, but it's everyone's blowing each other about how great this movie is. Like, oh my God, and it's true. Like, it's a perfect movie.
Yeah.
But you can't have fellatio for 10 hours straight.
Oh. Right. You and need to have that break. Festival has to be about sort of having different experiences with each movie.
Absolutely.
It can't just be the same thing five times in a row.
And obviously when you talk about 1985, you talk a lot about nostalgia. And obviously there's an entry in our glossary, the Goonies derivation, where you say, like, let's examine why we think this movie, just like Commando, just like Pee-wee's Big Adventure, that all these movies, obviously, we have a great memory of, But how do we think about them now? And obviously some are way more successful. I think Pee Wee and Back to the Future, we've said, are timeless. And this one is not. But I think if you grew up, if you were Sean Astin's age at that time, I know obviously it doesn't work for everyone, but it works a lot more, I think, if that's the case.
Mark on, you've been silent.
Sorry. I think I tried rewatching Goonies a while ago, just knowing that it was coming up on for today, for the fest. And so I tried to rewatch it by myself, and I couldn't get through the first 15 to 20 minutes. I just couldn't get past the whole, like, I'm an adult now and I'm not a kid, like when I first watched it. So I think actually watching in the dungeon with all of
Can
you.
Can we stop calling it that, everyone?
Sorry, the crypt.
the dungeon was actually a great experience, was like the best possible way to do it, because then you get that energy with everybody. You see everybody's comments, whether it's like they liked it or they hate it. It doesn't matter, because just watching it by myself, I couldn't get past the first 15 minutes. I was like, no, it's just.
Did you grow up watching it?
No, I watched it, like, I remember, like, watching it, like, when it first came out for, like, a friend's birthday party or something like that. And as a kid, just sort of like, yeah, that was fun, but, like, not remembering anything about it, really.
Okay. Interestingly enough, revisit. Jan and I think we rented it. This is 18 or 19 years ago, because we thought maybe Jake, our son, would like it. But we wanted to watch it first, because we didn't remember it. And we didn't get past the first 20 minutes either, because we were surprised. I know my memory of it was way different, and the first 20 minutes is mean-spirited and kids swearing.
Yeah.
And he was 5, and we said, nope, and we ejected.
But we didn't grow up watching.
Ejected it? Like a VHS?
And then you guys watched Vision Quest.
And now he's a wrestler, so everything worked out. Sorry, Jen, go ahead.
No, that's it. I mean, we didn't have that childhood affection for it.
Right.
And so it was very easy for us to say, no.
Now, in defense of JB and you, I mean, that's a pretty cheap argument on my behalf to say, like, I grew up with it, so I like it. But I do think
it's
how you feel about something.
But I open the podcast sort of by saying,
coming from an authentic emotional place.
True,
though,
but you want to separate your critical faculties from that sometimes and say, what? Well, and of course, I can recognize the racism and the bad lines and the bad beats and the parts where, like, they all say things and it's a Three Stooges thing at some point. But I also love that there's water slides, and they get to a thing that feels like a theme park. When they land in that pool, the water's so clean, and it's like the pirate ship, it seems like...
This isn't like any of the caves I've been in.
It's fucking Epcot, is what it is. And that's just like, it's. I liked it for that respect, too, and that's around the same time I actually
went
to
That's my favorite part of the movie, as I said, the water slide in the pirate ship. I said this in a column like 2 or 3 years ago. I will not have an argument with the 8-year-old you. There's no winning that argument.
Right.
If your affection for it is based on your childhood.
Right. Okay. I opened the podcast saying, right, I saw this movie when I was 8 and loved it and got everything out of it that I'm going to get, and I can't necessarily come back to it. But it's interesting, too, that like Commando, that my memory of it is that it's so much of it is on the compound, you know? My memory of Goonies is that so much of it is in the cave, and I forget, like, where they're just underground shaking pipes and, like, it takes a while to get to the cave. There's still a lot in the cave, but you forget a lot of the buildup that makes it feel slower sometimes on these rewatches where you're like, well, you just get to the cave already.
It's definitely these beats just take a long time. Yeah. It's a very slow movie. But I also think in defense and to be kind of an adult, I think it is actually pretty well shot.
For sure.
It's well lit, and I kind of like the look of everything. Right. And I like the music. I think the music is really good.
Well, compared to Explorers. You know, as far as, like, for instance, we were talking about the end of Explorers, how ugly the spaceship is.
Right.
If there was that pirate ship cave when I was growing up that I could get to on my bike, I would have gone there every day.
No, guys, absolutely. We'd be on our bikes right now.
We would be. This podcast would be taking place in the pirate cave.
But I want to go back to something from Explorers just really quickly, and this might be really subjective. We were talking about how ugly the aliens are in Explorers.
Yeah.
I've always felt... Again, this might be completely subjective, that Sloth was a really odd, realistic, really ugly special effect for a kid's movie.
Yeah.
And back when I originally saw it, and today, I think Sloth is more disturbing and scary than the aliens and Explorers. I don't know why it has to be Charles Lawton in The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
I gotta put my finger on that, because I think I understand like why people embrace Sloth and people wouldn't embrace Aliens is because Sloth has been diluted through action figures and through t-shirts and things like
that.
Through familiarity. So he's not threatening and weird anymore. He's the Stay Puft Marshmallow
Man.
He's
also human.
Well,
right? I mean, that's barely.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, but I'm saying, like,
where the aliens, I mean, yeah, it's like the creatures in Nothing But Trouble. I mean, it's like disgusting.
Even the 8-year-old me was never a fan of Sloth, wished he wasn't in the movie, certainly wished he wasn't in it as much, and I remember really wanting to see the movie, and he wasn't really part of the marketing, so when I got there, and I was like, wow, this monster's really in the movie a lot, and I didn't like, because Chunk, as a kid, was my favorite character, that Chunk is sidelined for the whole movie. He's in the dumb Sloth story, and he doesn't get to be in the cave near Cary Green.
also, want to give a shout-out to Joe Pantoliano, who retweeted us.
Yeah.
Joe Pants.
Yeah. Pants. What thank up? You for that.
Eddie Ventro from Congo.
Big Bound fan, Joey Pants. Big Bound fan. Yeah, so Goonies is Goonies, and somebody even tweeted that, like, Goonies was Goonies. Can't wait for Back to the Future. So obviously we closed the festival out with Back to the Future because we know what we're doing, and you can't do a 1985 festival without Back to the Future, but also to go out on the highest of high notes.
You've almost set yourself up for failure next year. Whatever you pick, what can you possibly...
Let's just all accept right now
that it's going to be a disaster.
It might not be a disaster, but it just
next might year we end with Explorers.
And it's 85. One of the few times where popularity equals quality, because Back to the Future was the top grossing film of 1985.
That's and the fun. Second highest was Rambo. Which is so upsetting to me, well, because those movies are...
It's the John Mulaney joke. Mentioned. We have lobster and Skittles.
I think there was only one person tweeting with us who had said that they had never seen Back to the Future, like you pointed out earlier, Doug.
I think his name was Grambo?
Grambo, who was the second highest grossing movie of 1985. Did
you say Grinting?
Yeah, but he said he had never seen it before, and that was really fun.
Yeah. So, reflections on Back to the Future, because honestly, the whole movie, I just sat there like, I love it so much.
I thought it was funny when I mentioned what other movies opened against Back to the Future. It was Red Sonja and the Emerald Forest, and somebody, like, took me to task for making fun of the Emerald Forest.
I don't think they took you to task.
What's the Emerald Forest?
It's a John Borman movie with Powers Booth.
The Gremlins.
Oh.
And I think all they were saying was, like, actually, that movie's pretty good.
All right, sorry. I'm really upset over it.
I haven't seen it since junior high, the Emerald Forest. Yeah. But anybody on Back to the Future? What do we
what
say?
To say?
Right.
It looks great on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
It's awesome on Blu-ray.
Why are the Blu-rays so hard to get out of the box?
I don't know what they were thinking. It actually comes with instructions on how to take it out because they are difficult.
Last summer, the Century Chain was showing classic films. They still do it. It's like Sunday night and Wednesday after something like that. Twice a week, they show an old film, and it was over the summer, and I went to a whole bunch of them. In 1 week, it was Back to the Future, and I sat there in the theater, and I said, this thing still plays.
Yeah.
Here's one quibble, and it isn't even a quibble. It's one moment in the film that I like so much, I wish it was amplified. I don't think there's any way to make this work plot-wise. When Marty goes back to the past and goes to see Doc Brown, when the door opens and Christopher Lloyd's got that thing on his head, it's just this wonderful moment. I wish that could be our introduction to Doc Brown. There's no way to do that.
As opposed to in 1985.
Yeah.
Okay.
You have that movie, It's Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, with Wayne Szalinski. That's all that helmet.
And to me, and we're just interpreting the moment differently, to me that is the introduction to Doc Brown, because 1955 Doc Brown is a totally different character.
Yeah.
So I've always... He gets two great entrances
That's a good point.
I feel like. It was great to read a lot of tweets from people saying, like, oh, I never noticed... on the clock at the beginning, there's a guy hanging off the clock. It's like a Harold Lloyd reference. And of course, the script is so airtight that all of these things call back to each other. And, it's a perfect movie.
One thing I'm curious about, because I was three in 1985.
Get out of here, Junior.
So, sorry. Junior was 94. So
I was 23.
When this came out in theaters and it wasn't, you know, Back to the Future. It was Back to the Future. It was this new movie.
Yeah.
Like, did people kind of, like, were they as wowed by it as we are now, right, like, immediately? Or
I think I saw it twice in the theater. I remember it being a good time. It wasn't what it is now.
Yeah.
But it was a hell... I mean, that's one of the reasons it was the top grossing film.
Mm-hmm. People
and think about it. Is the top grossing film of the year often a comedy?
Right.
Yeah.
It wowed people. It was a great time.
It was interesting because, like, I watched old Siskel and Ebert episodes on line sometimes. And I watched the one for Back to the Future, and they reviewed it like they were reviewing Better Off Dead. It was interesting. So they treated it like it was
this week's movie.
This week's teen comedy.
Right.
So I thought that was super, you know, like where this was this movie like a sleeper, or was it expected to do like
this? It was not expected to do what it did at all. Yeah. At all. Well, you made a comment too that at some point it wasn't going to get made.
Right.
And then Spielberg stepped in and you know, kind of demanded it, and it got
It's why we go to movies. I mean, it really
got everything.
Delivers everything that you could want from a movie.
It has that great energy to it.
Oh my gosh. And it never lets up. And I commented before the festival today on a podcast maybe saying, you can't believe when you get to the dance, you can't believe that you're already at the dance. And then people were all sort of reinforcing that on Twitter saying, you're right. Oh my gosh, I can't believe we're here already, because it moves so quickly.
You think the dance is the end and there's another hour.
Right.
Yeah.
But that first hour flies by, and it just has so many great characters and great performances and great lines of dialogue. Obviously, we're never going to do a full, proper podcast on Back to the Future.
It'll be 20 different be the podcasts point? Exactly. And each talking about something new.
Yeah. Right. One thing I wanted to hear was, you had mentioned that you think the ending is a lot more subversive, I think, than, like, most people do. That I think most people interpret it as, like, this kind of giddy, happy ending, but you said that there was some kind of, like, 80s... darker stuff? Is that
Zemeckis just was always a little bit critical of the people being sellouts, and I think it seems like the parents are sellouts at the end, but we're supposed to embrace that they've achieved sort of the Ronald Reagan dream, but so much of the movie is sort of undercutting that idea of a Ronald Reagan dream. I've backed off that position a little bit.
Sorry.
Probably because they seem so happy with each other.
Right. Mm-hmm. But again, you get to this moment where he gets back to 1985, and the first thing he sees is this dilapidated porn theater, and he's like, oh, thank God I'm back. Yeah. America! You know, it's so great.
Just talking about subversive stuff, when you're a kid watching this movie, this has been talked about before, and I'm sure it's the theme on Twitter, too, that you don't realize how subversive this movie is, in a lot of ways. One is that when I was a kid, I didn't realize that Hill Valley in 1985 was a shithole.
Right.
I just thought it was a suburb, you know, and not to say like I was oblivious to blight, but I think that part of it I was, because I'm a kid. I saw this, by the way, in a theater opening run with my oldest sister, and I was wearing shorts, and the theater was air conditioned. I was freezing. I didn't even enjoy the movie because I was so cold.
Yeah.
So that's like a weird memory that I have. but also the subversion, if that's a word, I think so, is about also like the mother, how he's kissing his mom, about the kind of like flaunting. And we talked before about how Reagan use this as like the 50s are great and blah blah blah. And it's like, no, you asshole, we're making fun of you, you know. And
it reduces him to a guy who looked good on TV.
Exactly. But I'm blown away by like the band, Marvin Berry's band, smoking weed in the car. I'm unaware of that. There's racism that's like, I'm sure because it's not the N-word, I didn't really know the derogatory word spook. That was a horrible thing to say, you know. And it blew me away that now that I'm an adult and I see this, and I'm like, holy shit, this is like really some dark stuff here.
Right.
Two quick things. That now we watch it and Hill Valley's kind of a shithole, but it's Marty's shithole and it's comfortable. But what's interesting, and I'm not a fan of the sequel, the part two, but in part two, they make Hill Valley even worse with that It's a Wonderful Life Biff Town, which also makes us look back more fondly at Marty's Hill Valley. Also, for the two people listening to the podcast who've never heard this, was it the BFI monograph that first spilled the information that in an earlier draft of Back to the Future, there was a scene that they wound up cutting, and I guess Spielberg filed it away and he kept it in the back of his mind because it later shows up in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Crystal Skull.
Crystal Skull. In the first draft of Back to the Future, Marty stumbles upon a nuclear test and gets into a lead-lined refrigerator to save himself. But how you would work that into the film that we have.
Right.
But that would just add to this how it's just so subversive. Like, yeah, of course.
Patrick, I'm sorry.
No.
Patrick, you know a lot more about this movie than I do. My question is, if a movie almost didn't get made, how do they put, like, a to-be-continued on the end of it? I mean, that seems like a really ballsy thing to do.
I may be remembering this incorrectly. Okay. So I apologize for those of you who know for a fact, if I'm wrong. I want to say in the original run,
It was not there.
Yeah, I don't think there was.
That it didn't say to be continued until later prints.
On the VHS.
Right.
Oh, no, no, no. I can tell you that definitively.
Okay.
In the theater.
It just ended.
Right.
Yeah.
That was not there.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So they just fly off into the, like, right. We don't need
because
Rogue
Because, really.
It.
Which is like a Matrix-like ending, which is awesome. And the movie stands
sequels, on its own. Sequels have always been popular and stuff, but let's get sequels out of our head. I think it works as a very satisfying ending to this.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you don't necessarily.
See what happens to the kids.
Right,
and he even says, you are going to be fine, which relieves us of that. Like,
right.
Oh, no, we're not out of the woods. Like, oh, no, they are going to be fine. Okay,
right.
So great. But you are going to turn into Elizabeth Shue?
You're going to get fired over facts.
And I tweeted.
The seagulls make me sad.
I tweeted about this, that a lesser filmmaker would have the DeLorean rise up, there's the wonderful thing we do with flying cars, and have it fly away. And it is so wonderful that it turns and then flies right into our face. That's just the last little kiss goodnight.
I watched this with my wife. She had never seen it, which shocked me. And I took off, I went, and took off my ring. We watched it about 2 years ago for the first time for her, and she liked it a lot, obviously. It's a great movie, you love it. And she was like, oh, I want to see the parts 2 and 3. And I was like, oh, no, that's this. We can just leave it at this. And we haven't seen those. So,
and my love of this movie is so independent. I can so divorce myself from the idea that there were even sequels produced. And I don't hate them, but they are just, they have nothing to do with this movie as far as I'm concerned.
It's their cash-ins.
They're fan fiction to me.
Totally.
The one thing I've always thought, though, the last half hour of part 2.
Yeah, it's
clever. I really give them credit for trying to do something ambitious. I don't think it works.
There are things to like in both the sequels.
It's pretty well worked out.
Yeah.
Why haven't they made that Jaws movie yet?
No, there's definitely things to like in both sequels, but man, they are not.
The Cubs beat the Florida Gators
in
the World Series.
Future. So let's go around the room now and we can all share favorite moment, whether it's a movie, a joke, a scene. We'll start with J-Bone.
I'd have to say the highlight of the day for me was Pee-wee, because I haven't seen it in a dog's age, and it brought back memories of my wife and I when we first got married. That's when the Saturday morning show was on, and we used to wake up on Saturday mornings and watch it, and that was...
Me too.
We would just watch it in bed in our pajamas.
Yeah.
And that was a wonderful way to wake. Get out of bed, there'll be no more napping. It's just a very warm memory, and it's such a funny movie.
It really is. I hadn't seen it in a long time, but holy cow.
I got two moments. One was...
I asked for one.
Well, you're going to get two.
You're greedy.
It's okay.
You're like Mouth, taking all the coins.
And the great lines.
There was... I forgot whose tweet it was. It was one of our... Somebody was following along with it. It was during Explorers. Sorry, Adam. And the person said, 67% of the kids are a bunch of pussies. The others are like Ethan Hawke.
I believe that was Bradley Wright.
Good job, Bradley. Appreciate it. The other one was kind of what...
66%.
To go along with what Doug was saying about Back to the Future being very subversive. And then I think our good friend Eric Ashbrosleger said something about 3 p.m. Brazier hour. Because George McFly is in the tree looking. And that's so subversive, right? Like he's looking into it. And some lady's changing.
Could I just interrupt here for just a second? It is so late. It is so past my bedtime. I'm so tired. I just looked over, and Mark has 3 baby carrots in his hand because Mark eats healthy. And the first thing I thought was that they were human fingers. That's how tired I am.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah, right.
We should mention, though.
I was just really scared for about 2 seconds.
We should mention Eric Ashbrosleger, who writes for our site and wasn't able to join us for the entire festival because... He is at home with his brand new baby daughter. Congratulations to Eric and family, but he did join us.
You did it, Eric.
A couple
proved
movies,
everyone wrong.
And his tweets are hilarious. And we should mention Heath Holland, who couldn't be with us because
he's
out of state. And he was with us all day. We all love Heath Holland and his wife, Brie. Very entertaining tweets and great to sort of be together with them. That's the advantage of a festival like that, is that we can all be together even when we're spread all over the goddamn world. Jan, highlights.
That you pretty much just said my highlight. I mean, seeing the movies was great, but kind of being part of the community that was very positive and supportive and all just like in it just to enjoy the movies from as to be movies, you know.
Yeah.
Just seeing them all like that, it was a lot. And also revisiting 85 because I was a grown up in 85. I was just finishing up college, and
you were watching Pee Wee's Playhouse, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Just
total grown up. Hashtag grown up.
And your pajamas.
I did college in my pajamas. But so when you choose, when you program like this from 1 year, it kind of does give you an overview of the kind of gestalt of the nation for that year. And so that was pretty cool.
It's hard to think of Michael J. Fox in Back to the Future being the same Michael J. Fox on Family Ties.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, just in terms of the way they're shot, like obviously video and film, but it, like you think of them as total different universes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Box office champ Nick Lane.
Beautiful.
Well, I have to go along with what Jan said. I had a great time with the community. Everybody's so nice, and you just get this feeling of everybody loving movies, like loving movies, loving all kinds of movies, loving the ones that are really good, and sometimes loving the ones that are bad, maybe me with Goonies. but so that was definitely a part of it, and I don't know, I liked it all. I really liked Charlie, our son, getting to see some of them and seeing it through his eyes.
Kind yeah,
of
that was cool.
Fun. And I liked flashing back to the music, and I know that that, like, already kind of wrote about that this week, but
yeah, you did.
that brings it all back for me, you know, like I was too young to see these movies in the theaters when they came out, so I guess it was like the next few years that my parents must have gotten them somehow, I don't know, when
illegally did, like, probably black market
off a torrent
when they came out on
young
VHS.
Charlie,
yeah, they came out on VHS.
Young okay. Charlie had some insightful comments. You tweeted some of them. My favorite one was about halfway through Pee Wee, I think he's going to get his bike back.
He predicted the end.
I know.
He did.
If he didn't get his bike back,
yeah,
it would be Explorer.
Take that, Charlie. There's no God. Douglas.
I was really happy with the amount of people that participated.
Holy
I think
cow,
the first
yes.
year was just us and maybe five or six other people, and it was fun, obviously.
Absolutely.
And those people are still around. The second year was probably double that, maybe. This year, I think I tallied up maybe 50 people participated this year. It was huge, and it really blew me away. And not only that, I was really impressed and pleased by the not just the fans and the new people that joined us, and thank you so much for being part of our community. Stick around. We guarantee there'll be more fun stuff. We do a great thing in the summer. This last year was Junesploitation. We do a great October-themed scary movie month. It's an awesome, awesome time that everyone has a great time. So please stick around and read the site every day.
Welcome.
But I'm also happy that a lot of people, like the writer of Explorers, chimed in. We had some heavy hitters that were Lucky McKee, a director of some of our favorite horror movies, was kind enough to join us and had some funny things to say and embraced the environment of this like happy experience, and it was really great.
I felt like he was one of our best friends. I wanted him to come over. Like,
but and again, and I said this, I think, on the podcast with you, not to keep referring back to that, but that's the feeling that this day cultivates, is that every single new person that shows up, you're just like, oh, my new friend, great, and you're all talking about the same movies, and you just feel like you
know
everybody.
So you won't even miss me when I move to California,
Why did you even bring it up?
Listen.
This podcast has turned into Explorers.
There is no God.
I want to say something else, too.
Stop shitting on Explorers.
I'm going to get another hot dog. You enjoy the ball game.
I want to say one other thing. Putting this together, it's not a lot of work in the traditional sense. It's not like you're heavy lifting and building a house with logs and lifting Alyssa Milano to save her from kidnappers. But it really is. Patrick does a great job in promoting this, and he absolutely knows in terms of programming and all that stuff. And I was a little bit. I'm privy to some of the behind the scenes stuff, and I was kind of disappointed. And this is kind of like, again, pulling back the curtain on the stuff that. In previous years, we actually got some props from media.
Press coverage.
Yeah, press coverage and media companies and people covering us. And this year, hardly anyone. However, IndieWire covered us, which was great, and Gaper's Block. So we really appreciate that.
Thank you.
But it really was. I was nervous before it started because I'm like, I didn't know how many people read that and followed along. It proved to me today that it really doesn't matter. And I'm really, you know, again, it was just a great experience. But it's a lot of work, and we're glad, in you know, a matter of speaking.
Right, sure.
And we're glad everyone could join us.
I'd like to thank my fan club for showing up. Whatever the hell that is.
Adam.
I'm just excited because of the hashtag at this movie fest
that I got to enter so many contests for free iPad. Like, seriously.
You and Ellen Page.
Yes. I have got to say, I think my... I loved watching Commando with all of you guys. That was awesome. And I got to be, like, knowing what was going to happen in the Explorers, like, just reading Twitter and, like, this moment where everybody's like, what the fuck is going on? Like, what is happening?
You burnt of this movie.
Yeah, right?
You know what that reminded me of, Adam? When The Shining came out, I went to see The Shining on Friday. And then Saturday night, I went to see it with another group of friends. And we sat in the front row. And at a point in the film, I shan't spoil it, I literally turned around in my seat and looked at the audience and got to see 600 people reacting
to a scary thing.
You guys know the moment I'm talking about.
The one person who caught your eye contact probably was so scared.
But that's... I agree with you. That's what I felt like watching Explorers. It's like... For the first hour, how did I ever miss this? I am loving this, and I'm like, "Oh, just wait!
You just wait!
You have no idea who's going to come out with an axe."
I was right next to Patrick during it, and Patrick's giggling to himself, like, "Oh, I can't wait to watch it! Oh, this is going to be great!"
Not that I get joy out of that. I was interested to see where that went. Mike,
I will echo what everyone else said. The feeling of community. All that was great, but to be honest, my, I don't know if it's my favorite moment or just the biggest moment of relief for me was watching Pee-wee's Big Adventure and hearing Patrick laugh, because Patrick ruined so many things for me. You don't understand. I just didn't want him to ruin Pee-wee. I was so happy that he enjoyed it.
It's so
fine. You burnt me.
You burnt.
Follow that,
bitch. I got a few things, so I'll be quick on them. Having the 1985 week afforded me the opportunity to see a lot of movies that I wouldn't have done before, or I sporadically would have watched over the years, hopefully, and I'm happy for that. Two, this lineup featured a bunch of movies that I don't really like all that much, but watching them with people who do like them shed light on why they like it, and I like them more because of that. Mm-hmm. And that's something that is really awesome, because now I have a newfound appreciation for Pee-wee and for Goonies and Not Explorers and Commando. but mostly, a couple of my in-person friends outside the F This Movie community joined us this year. But more importantly than that, people who I know through the F This Movie community embraced them and were really friendly to them, even though they were brand new. And that just shows what a special group that we have together. And, you know, we had an unfortunate case in action where we were put to the test, and we defended those people because we love them to the bitter and the lager end.
I want to say also, just really quick, this was truly an international festival. We had people, help me out here, Australia, Nova Scotia, Canada, Alabama, New York, England, London.
You're describing the bad guys from Commando.
France.
Ireland.
Somebody
from London, France. Ireland. Somebody in my underpants.
Yeah. The people in England concluded at 4:30 in the morning.
Yeah,
they stayed
up
until 4:30
Think about that. Back to the Future ended in Greenwich Mean Time at 4:30 a.m. That's insane. And because it's a testament to, like, this community, like Adam said. And also, that movie's kick-ass, and I would say up until 4:30 also to watch it. I might watch it tonight.
I totally could. I'm going to end up just obviously echoing what everybody else said. But there was a point during Back to the Future where I stopped and thought to myself, like, think about what's going on right now and how great this is. We're watching my favorite movie, and all of these people are just talking about how much they love it, and we're all having so much fun together. I'm very, very fortunate that I get to have everybody here in our basement, and we get to read the tweets to one another and be like, oh my God, did you read what so-and-so wrote? And we all laugh, or we're laughing at the movie together. And so we're very fortunate. I really enjoyed that part of it. We don't always all get together, and so it's nice that we're able to for the fest, but
you burnt everyone else.
So that's super fun. And not everybody has that opportunity. A lot of people are watching these again by themselves or with, you know, a friend or a spouse or whatever. But again, the spirit of the event is such that it really does feel like we're all together. And I'm really glad that that kind of comes across, because that was the idea when we first started it, was we're this community that's spread out everywhere, and it would be great to all get together in a theater and have a film festival.
Yeah, we actually tried, like we talked about it.
Right. Yeah. But gosh, people just can't travel overseas, you know, to come to our one day 1985
they could.
Festival. They could. Explorers, the way it was meant to be seen. And so we thought, well, this is, you know, kind of the next best thing. And we invented this idea for a film festival. And yeah, Douglas, who has done a ton of behind-the-scenes work on this and who was manning the F This Movie official Twitter all day. Woo, Doug! and I were talking that we were a little bit disappointed about the lack of sort of press coverage. And we both kind of came to the realization, and today just totally cemented it, that we just sort of need to reframe how we look at it. And that part of it, we always felt like, oh, maybe, you know, people will take notice of this special thing that we're doing. And the idea was always to get more people to participate, but also to see that we're doing something different. And after the total lack of interest from the outside, we just feel like, well, fuck it. Who needs them?
Absolutely.
Because we have all these other great people who are super excited. And this only succeeded because of word of mouth, because of everyone's enthusiasm, and because everybody's willing to be positive and friendly, and nobody's bickering with one another or fighting about the movies or whatever, even as we're expressing different opinions, everything gets turned into a joke. And halfway through Back to the Future, I just thought, oh my gosh, I'm having the best time. And I don't, you know, usually get super emotional, especially about F This Movie, but as Doug had said earlier, like, it can be hard work, and we love it, but it can be hard work. And planning this festival and getting all the content that goes into 1985 week was a lot of work this week. And today made it so much more than worth it. Today was really my favorite day in the 4 years that we've been doing F This Movie. Today really was my favorite day in the whole history of the site. And I just really have to thank everybody who participated. I feel like we made so many new friends today. I really, really hope that everybody will stay with us, follow one another on Twitter, continue to talk about movies and share things that you love, because it is really great. If I'll log on to Twitter one day and just see Heather Wixon, who we were very lucky to have join us, you know, making a joke with Josh in Florida, and they only know each other, you know, because of F This Movie, that we've sort of introduced people to one another who now have these things in common, and we're very, very fortunate to have one another and to have all of you, and we really, really, really appreciate it. Today was definitely my favorite F This Movie Fest yet. We have a high bar to cross next year. So I'm going to pick a shitty year for movies and pick bad movies on purpose. And
five cups in a row.
Summer of 98. Back to the Future 2.
I like this five cuffs idea. I'm down with that.
Five cuffs and a Pickford, please.
What Patrick is saying is he will not feel fulfilled until two of you get married. So get on the stick. Get on the stick with that.
We do need to have our first F This Movie wedding. Anyway, thank you guys very, very much for participating today. Doug was keeping a list all day. We talked about reading it. But honestly, it got to a point where there were so many people that
it really is.
We can't read everyone. But just know that if you tweeted once or 200 times today,
we took note.
We so, so appreciate it. And people left and came back, which is unbelievable.
Absolutely.
That
Doug will come to your house.
People made a point of being with us today. And that means the world to us. So thank you guys very, very much. We will be back next week with a much less sentimental show.
There will be no sentiment. No. I know what it's going to be.
Zero sentiment. So thank you guys very much. Another successful F This Movie Fest in the books. We love you.
Yay.
See you next week.
Woo! 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 Thank you, everybody.
Can we laugh?